The following is a presentation of the High Spot Podcast. Making their way to the ring, talking about the world of professional wrestling, the team of Jeff Martin and the trendsetter, Brian Perga. The Jersey Wrecking Crew.
You're listening to the High Spot Podcast. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew. I am Jeff Martin, alongside my tag team partner, the trendsetter, Brian Berga. You can follow us on all our social media at High Spot Podcast and highspotpodcast.com. Of course, our debut on Spreaker here officially, the High Spot Podcast. Going to recap some Survivor Series and TakeOver War Games. First and foremost, hope you all had a great Thanksgiving, trendsetter. What is going on? We head into the holiday season now. It is upon us, but still got a lot of WWE to talk about.
Not only WWE, a lot of professional wrestling to talk about, because if you had your fill of Thanksgiving feast, you're going to have your fill of professional wrestling. And all the news we talk about here on the High Spot Podcast, Jeff, I mean, it just seems like every single week there's something new to dive into, which is great. Gives us a reason to talk to one another, but also just something to dissect and something to break down, because the huge bill that we were talking about was about Survivor Series closely leading to the road, believe it or not, guys, to WrestleMania.
Yeah, you know, usually it's the Royal Rumble, but now just so much in the WWE to talk about. And like you said, Survivor Series, TakeOver. Where do you want to start, trendsetter? What do you think is the direction that we should go into?
Let's start off what we talked about before, prior to Thanksgiving. We spoke about, you know, the comparisons of NXT TakeOver and Survivor Series. Was the main roster going to have to, you know, kind of had home run because NXT TakeOver was going to be so good? We predicted it was going to be. It proved us right. And my goodness, I mean, it's been a while since I've watched NXT. I've tried to watch it. Unfortunately, with our schedules, it's kind of difficult sometimes, even though it is on the WWE Network. But my goodness, you know, from the top to bottom, each one of those matches told a story. And here's the funny thing, too, because I had not seen it for so long, to watch it after not knowing really the plots and storylines, you could still tell what was going on, and that's what enthralled me so much about it, because I didn't have to be so invested in. You could just tell by the emotion of the atmosphere there in LA, in Los Angeles, at the Staples Center, and basically the performances from top to bottom on the card.
I think TakeOver as a whole was a much better show, but I do think, though, that the more headlines came out of Survivor Series, and I would say probably the final two matches really were the ones that where you take away from, where you're excited about the direction of where WWE may be going as far as the character advancement of a Charlotte, of a Ronda Rousey, of a Daniel Bryan. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about Brock Lesnar, too, because he deserves a little round of applause, because I think that he showed on Sunday exactly what kind of wrestler he can be. I've said it tons and tons of times that Brock is a once-in-a-lifetime generational superstar. A lot of people go out there and complain and say that, you know, Brock is just, oh, same old shit, and they're saying that, you know, on the show when he was suplexing the hell out of Daniel Bryan. But, you know, once again, though, they kind of had like that AJ Styles match from last year where AJ Styles was able to make a comeback, so does Daniel Bryan. So we'll get into that, and I'll show you why, I'll tell you why I think Brock Lesnar should be more respected. But again, though, I believe that TakeOver as the whole was a better show, but the two headlines are those two matches from Survivor Series. I think that's what everyone is talking about. So let's go really quick to NXT TakeOver, though. Let's talk about that. My favorite match, and it's tough because that War Games match was really good, but I'm going to go to Tommaso Ciampa and Velveteen Dream. To me, that was the match. I think that had a great story. I think that Ciampa shows again why, when we do this top 10 wrestlers of 2018, when we head on later in the as we close the year out, I think Tommaso Ciampa is very like overlooked, and I think that he will be in there in that top 10 for me, at least, of 2018. That was my favorite match.
Well, yeah, I mean, you kind of stole my thunder there a little bit. I would have to agree with you. That was one of my top favorite matches from NXT TakeOver. If I had to pick a second one, the War Games was good. But I have to say the whole Aleister Black and Johnny Gargano to start off and kick off the show was definitely huge.
Literally kick off the show. It didn't literally kick off the show. It was Baszler and Kerry Sane was the...
Oh,
no,
I'm sorry.
Actually, no, Riddle and Kesha's Ohno. Or say, how did you say it on NXT?
Oh, like, wow. Let me clear my throat here a little bit. It was...
Here, I'll set it up.
Matt Riddle and Cassius know.
I missed that, man.
But was that really an official match to kick off? It was kind of like a... It wasn't set up on the card.
Wasn't on the card at first, but then, of course, during the pre-show, Cashiano got in Riddle's face, and technically they were supposed to have it on Wednesday, which they're still going to do, but it looks like, I guess, they wanted to get Riddle in there, and it was only going to be a squash match anyway, so that's why they wanted to get Riddle in there. And listen, I got to tell you one thing. Riddle's future is so bright. I think he's got the it factor, and you know what? I think
one of these days we have to define what that it factor is.
Yeah, one day I'll define that factor, but I think he's relatable. I think what fans will do is relate to that guy because he's a cool dude. He's chill. So I think a lot of people can relate to him. I think he's got a bright future. But yeah, Riddle beats Cassius Ohno and basically setting up the feud for this coming Wednesday. But
just going back real quick on the match that I was really interested in, which was the main event.
Aleister Black, yeah.
For the NXT Championship. No, I thought that match was good as well with Gargano and Aleister Black, the story they told. Mm. Thought Gargano was going to get the win. Unfortunately, didn't. But to me, as much as you're talking about Tommaso Ciampa, and I give you 100% credit and Tommaso Ciampa credit for, yes, we should be talking about how good he really is, but how good right now in terms of Patrick Clark, a.k.a. the Velveteen Dream. He showcased, you know, had an opportunity. They gave him an opportunity. Here's your chance in the spotlight. Do the best you can. I think he hit home run with it, walking out in the NWO colors like Hollywood Hogan. You know, just him portraying that character.
Obviously, he had to be a huge influence on his career, Hulk Hogan, for the Velveteen Dream to, you know, portray a lot of the Hulk Hogan persona.
Not only a persona, but he has a natural charisma about him, and he held his own against Tommaso Ciampa. It's not easy for one of the best people in NXT right now to stand toe-to-toe with somebody like that, and I wouldn't say necessarily outshine him, but he showed that he is a major player in NXT and maybe opened some eyes on the main roster. So I'm so happy for Patrick Clark, the person, because of what he's had to go through to get here, and now he's in the position he's in right now.
So Velveteen Dream, a lot of rumors about him going to the main roster. We talked a little bit of it last time, whether Velveteen Dream would be the next one to get called up. There were rumors saying that there were going to be call-ups after Survivor Series, which is kind of weird. Usually SummerSlam and WrestleMania. But we saw at Survivor Series that they were showing vignettes of Lars Sullivan coming to WWE, either Raw or SmackDown, don't know yet. He showed up, the promo showed up on both shows. Are you a little surprised that Lars is going to get the call over Velveteen Dream? I know Velveteen Dream's got an awesome future ahead of him. It's not if, but when he goes up to the main roster. I believe that Vince McMahon is just, again, land of the Giants. Yeah. Vince McMahon sees something in Lars Sullivan, wants to get him up there, probably maybe a future foe for either McIntyre or Braun Strowman. Will definitely have a bright future, but do you think he should have gotten the nod over Velveteen Dream? I don't know. I'm still iffy, but I just think it's Vince's love for Giants.
Well, we shouldn't be surprised, Jeff, because the mere fact that you just mentioned before, it's the land of the Giants. Now, if he does go to Raw, it's just you're just filling up that land of more Giants and more monsters, as opposed to, I think he'd be more beneficial going to SmackDown. He's isolated. Nobody's really there to compete with him one-on-one, so he could be that dominant force on the SmackDown Live brand. But no, it doesn't surprise me. Do I think he should be there? You know, it's my opinion. I think he still needs more work. It would be nice to see him, similar how we talked about, I'm Canadian, We talked about somebody like Apollo Crews and how much he needed more work in NXT to kind of build up that name so he wouldn't get lost in the shuffle. And I don't think he's going to fall into the same trap as Apollo Crews did. But at the same time, you're putting somebody in the spotlight just mere for their size or their presence. But at the same time, are they ready? Will their character be there? Will they be able to adjust to a big fish in a small pond and now to an ocean? We'll see what happens. But I'm not surprised at all by the move.
Get to War Games, which I liked it at first impression. I was there. I was clapping through everything. I had it down muted. I was working. So I was kind of, you know, trying to watch and trying to work at the same time. But what I was watching, I liked what I saw. I think that they gave it a hell of an effort. I think that the Undisputed Era is really good. I really can't say anything negatively about Adam Cole, baby. I can't say anything bad about Roderick Strong or Kyle O'Reilly or Bobby Fish. War Machine, I'm going to call them War Machine, War Raiders.
Yes.
One of the most impressive tag teams. And I just always find myself thinking, man, these guys are so good, But if they go on the tag team roster division on Raw or SmackDown, they're going to get lost. I love them on NXT. I love what they're doing. They're so athletic. If you haven't seen them before, go watch a Ring of Honor match. Go watch a New Japan match with these guys. These guys are legit. They showed how great they are. They're so quick. They're so agile, so athletic for guys of their size. And they're very impressive. Ricochet, what can you say about Ricochet, man? He's got those flips. That was amazing. Mauro Ranallo can just, you know, he can probably promote paint and drying and people still pay to watch and get excited over paint drying. And Pete Dunne, you know, this is a smaller guy. This is the UK champion, but man, they push him like a giant here. They really love Pete Dunne too. So all in all, they did a great job. But again, the critique is here, did it live up to last year's? I think this is better than last year's, but still, I don't think I'd outshine that match between Gargano and Velveteen Dream.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. To me, that was the match that everybody wanted to see, in my opinion. That's the one that stole the show, theoretically. But, yeah, I think this one superseded the first one. The only thing that I question out of it is, of course, you have Undisputed Era against, you know, the War Raiders. I guess I'll buy into what they're saying. War Raiders, Pete Dunne, Ricochet. And, you know, with that being said, what I'm concerned, if I focus just on the War Raiders themselves, you're looking at a team that can, you know, be so successful in NXT, because right now you look at that tag team division, you know how much I love tag team wrestling, Jeff. It's depleted in a way. There's really nobody there to compete. So when you see the War Raiders against a team like the Undisputed Era, that's interesting storyline right there, but there still needs to be more foundation underneath that tag team division, because like we've seen with the Revival, we've seen with all the tag teams that have come up from NXT to the main roster, they just get lost in the shuffle. So it really comes to the debate that, you know, there's no doubt you said they are legit. But after this, we see how they build within the months leading to WrestleMania TakeOver in New York, in Brooklyn. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, will they be a team that gets called up early? I don't know, but I would prefer them not to get called up, because they'll just flourish in NXT more than going up to the main roster. And a team as good as the War Raiders, a.k.a. War Machine, does not need that to happen. Ricochet, there's only one of a kind of him. And, you know, to me, I think it's just a matter, as much as the Undisputed Era is a dominant force in NXT, it's a matter of time before Adam Cole, as you say, baby, will be called up most likely to the main roster, because he's a star in his own. He is a singles competitor, and you know what? I would like to see that North American title defended every once in a while, too.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny where a guy like Lars Sullivan wouldn't fit into this picture, because they're just so loaded with guys here going for each title. I mean, the North American Championship, you still have that Ricochet Adam Cole thing. Lars kind of didn't fit into that. And when you have a guy like EC3 that doesn't make the show, it shows you how huge this roster is. A lot of rumors about people joining NXT in 2019. Guys like Shane Strickland, which it's very exciting to see a guy like Shane Strickland go to maybe NXT. Guys like ACH. It's going to be exciting, but you gotta see. Maybe, like we were talking about guys like Apollo Crews, maybe they just don't go and become that NXT champion that they should be, because there's just so much, and you have guys that don't make it all the way over there, and they make it to the main roster. But again, though, from top to bottom, this is one of the best NXTs you know, that they've done. They've always outdo themselves. The Baszler and Kairi Sane match, to me, they're just too much interference, too much things going around. I know they want to set up maybe a six-woman tag team match maybe down the road, but I just think it was just too much.
I would agree, too. It was too much. It felt more like, in my opinion, a schmoz, in the sense that, yes, it was two out of three.
Schmoz, I love it.
Yeah, you love that word. Two out of three fall match, but at the same time, you're right. Just so much things going on outside the ring that it really depleted and took away from your focus what was going on inside the ring with Shayna Baszler and Kairi Sane, who have good chemistry together. But to me, it just kind of took away from the match, and the main focus was what was going to happen on the outside rather than what was going on in the match itself.
Oh, definitely. And I want to thank Brian Fritz and the Cheap Pops Podcast Network, because that's where we are. And this is our first official debut episode. We've been on it before, but now we can officially announce we're on Spreaker.com. We've moved over. You can still catch us on Blog Talk Radio, but you can also catch these episodes on Spreaker, too. And we just look forward to that partnership. Of course, you still got great shows like Sports Guys Talking Wrestling, Cosmetic Geppetto, and Stick to the Gimmick. So I want to give a shout-out to everyone there and everyone at the Chief Pops, and wish them a happy Thanksgiving. Hope they had a great Thanksgiving and holiday season. But now we go into the Survivor Series, right? Mm-hmm. And here we're thinking they're going to do the normal, one wins three, the other wins three, and then we get to that final one, which determines it. Not likely was the outcome, because what they decided to do is make this a clean sweep for Monday Night Raw. The Raw brand is the more dominant brand. Raw wins the brand supremacy. Just thinking about this, and you know, we're talking about NXT, and maybe NXT is the B show now, you know, because I just don't see what the sense was to do a clean sweep if you're not going to address it on SmackDown either. Shane did not address it at all. Shane did not say there's going to be ramifications, and to me, they should have done that, because to me, this is just Vince McMahon saying, listen, we're going to clean sweep SmackDown, and now we're going to forget about talking about it. I still don't understand why SmackDown was made to look so inferior.
You weren't the only one that didn't understand it, Jeff. I was the one sitting there with you too, not getting why this was going on. There's no way, in terms of mathematically, as the event went on, that SmackDown was ever going to compete in terms of possibly tying it up or taking the lead. So ultimately, in the end, it was a squash versus Survivor Series. And I can't understand myself the logic behind who was ever coming up with this decision. We like to think ultimately it's Vince to say, you know what, we're going to be dominant over SmackDown. When you would think, at this point, Jeff, you would think with the long history of Monday Night Raw, right, and they celebrated not too long ago SmackDown's 1,000th episode, right, you think with all this, it would not hurt Raw, even in the mindset of, you know, the A and B show, for them to get defeated by SmackDown Live. It would just bring more lure to SmackDown Live as we're eventually getting closer to the fact they're going to be on Fox Sports. So to me, it made absolutely no sense. Maybe it's just something that Vince wanted to laugh about and just do.
Yeah, it has to be his own sick, twisted little ha, you know.
Probably, you know, that's the way I'm thinking.
I do understand that. And then when you watch SmackDown this past Thursday, this past Tuesday, you're like, man, I was like, this was such a mail-in. I mean, they're there all weekend. And now next year, Survivor Series is in Chicago. And now it's going to change where, since SmackDown moves to Friday nights, it's going to be the whole start of the weekend is going to be Friday. So you get there Friday, you watch SmackDown, which is the go-home for the event. And then you get to go see TakeOver. Then you get to see the Survivor Series on Monday night. So I think it's going to work. Because, listen, you're dead tired. By Tuesday, I'm looking to sell those tickets, you know? And you're like, oh, I don't want to go there. And I heard they had problems selling out the Staples Center for that last Tuesday. They're giving tickets away. I just, for the life of me, don't understand why, you know, if it's your brand, if it's your product, why it's going to be so inferior when, obviously, it is the wrestling show. So I still don't understand that. It infuriates me to no end. But let's get to this card real quick. And I say technically a sweep because it really wasn't a sweep, because in the pre-show you had the tag team, you know, elimination match. And, of course, you know, SmackDown comes out on top, but it doesn't count. I don't understand. And then, of course, the Usos beat the Revival. That Revival, I think they have no revival whatsoever. I think that they're done. I don't want to say that because I love them. I love them in NXT. But there's just no way to save these guys. When you have them losing Lucha Party, when you have them, you know, have the opportunity to get them here with a big win for Raw, if you're going to clean sweep it here, do it here. Was there miscommunication? Should have the Revival maybe have won and it just didn't work out that way? Fine. But man, the Usos did not need to get this victory here. It should have been the Revival. And, you know, SmackDown, technically, this didn't count. So you start off with, like, confusion here and you're thinking that SmackDown's got the momentum, which they really didn't.
No, you're right about that. I mean, in, you know, for the mere fact that it didn't count, a whole bunch of people on social media started scratching their head, like, what is going on here? But ultimately, they'll probably justify it as it was a pre-show match, so it didn't count because it wasn't part of the actual Survivor Series card. But then ultimately, if that was the case, and this is the thing that just makes me even more in bewilderment, Jeff, if that was the case, then why even pit them as SmackDown versus Raw? Just make it a six-man tag team match, whatever the case might be. But you're doing that on purpose for what? For the benefit of just having this whole brand differential. And honestly, Jeff, at this point, do we really need them to wear shirts that say SmackDown Live and Raw to distinguish who they are on the brand? I mean, I know this is for the general audience and not for the die hardcores, but even if you're a general audience member, you look at AJ Styles, oh, he's a SmackDown guy. You look at some guy like Seth Rollins, oh, he's on Raw. You don't need shirts to separate them for us to know, unless we're colorblind, oh, he's Raw, he's SmackDown. To me, it dumbs it down really a lot.
At least Seth was able to, you know, half of his regular shirt and half of
the
Raw.
And honestly, that looks stupid. That looked dumb. It really did.
Can we stop with the shirts, please? I mean, my God, we're not stupid, okay? I mean, even a 12-year-old or a 6-year-old can differentiate who's on SmackDown and Raw. You can get a 6-year-old that's a WWE fan, he'll know who's on who's who. I mean, they can work a computer more than I can. They know who's on SmackDown and who's on Raw. I mean, please, with the shirts, hopefully it's not there next year. The women's matchup. Nia Jax had so much heat. You knew she was going to get the heat coming in because of the whole Becky situation. But at the end of the day, that punch heard around the world, the face breaker. you know, kind of changed the path of wrestling history, at least for the Survivor Series and going forward into WrestleMania. It's amazing what One Punch did, but at the end, it could be a blessing in disguise, Trendsetter, because now with everything going on, with what's developing, and maybe a possible triple threat main event between Charlotte, Becky, and Ronda at WrestleMania, who knows? Maybe this punch was a whole blessing in disguise. But before we get to that, though, talk about this matchup here. The again, Asuka gets the loss for the SmackDown team. Nia Jax is the sole survivor. I was like, fine, okay, but just shows you how far Asuka, last year the sole survivor, now loses to Nia Jax. And, of course, there should be some friction between Nia Jax and Sasha Banks, but still, my focus is, and we had Sonny Onoo on last week talking about Asuka and Nakamura, just how far she's fallen in that 1 year.
Well, not just she's fallen. Look how far both of them have fallen. Although Shinsuke Nakamura is the United States champion, the mere fact is,
one of the most meaningless runs ever.
And one of, in my opinion, one of the meaningless matches between him and Seth Rollins. I mean, in this scenario, really, you have Seth Rollins worrying about a rivalry with Dean Ambrose. Nothing's really going on with Shinsuke Nakamura, and he gets beat clean. And so does Asuka. And it just shows you, like you mentioned before, how they have fallen from previous, you know, when they first started up here and how they were built in NXT to where they are now in the WWE. Just makes you shake your head. You know, if Sonny Onoo was managing them, I think it would be a great benefit to both of them to be that bridge in between, so that you know the story can be told, like Sonny said. But ultimately, you know, my mindset is, you know, if you're Asuka and you're Shinsuke, I mean, what's the point of staying around now? Is it more of a
More for Nakamura too, because I think his contract is up sooner than Asuka's. So if you're Shinsuke Nakamura, you got to be like, you know, is it worth? You know, am I making good money here? I've done everything in New Japan. Are there new challenges? Maybe there's new challenges. Maybe if you decide to go back to New Japan, you can take on a Kenny Omega now. Maybe you can develop a new story. But, you know, going back to that interview with Sonny Onoo, he really said a lot. It's about that American wrestling fan and relating to them and telling the story. And I think a mouthpiece is needed. A guy like Sonny Onoo, too. So you made a great point. Guys, go back to that episode from last week. It's on our YouTube. It's on bodyslam.net. And it's also on highspotpodcast.com. A great interview with Sonny Onoo. And I think he would help.
Hey, he definitely would have. And then if we're going to see, in terms of, you talked about before, you know, a blessing in disguise for Nia Jax. Yeah, it's a blessing in disguise, Jeff, when you really look at it for Becky Lynch, Ronda Rousey, and now Charlotte, who finds herself in that type of triangle here that we could possibly see down the road, whether it be a Royal Rumble or Mania, depending how long it takes for Becky Lynch to recuperate from that concussion and broken nose slash face. But you know what? It's not a blessing in disguise for Nia Jax, because you know what? Although she's next in line and will face Ronda Rousey at TLC for the Raw Women's Championship, can we really think and foresee that Nia Jax could be victorious and become a new women's champion and change the whole perspective of it? I think it works in terms of it's, you know, she's riding that tidal wave of momentum, but that momentum isn't leading her anywhere different, because she's teaming up with Tamina Snuka, and I don't know where
Tamina. Mm-hmm. Exactly, same thing. Tamina is very lucky that she's related to Nia Jax. I'm just going to say that, because that is the only way why she's being associated with them. Yes, they make a tandem if they decide to do a tag team titles, if they want to do that, introduce them. I could see them doing that. But Nia Jax, her future is against Ronda Rousey at TLC for the Raw Women's Championship, so we'll see what happens there. But listen, it works for Nia Jax. She's taking advantage of this whole situation. She's become the face breaker. She's taking that heat. Staples Center was really, really on her, and you know, she's doing what she's doing. She's taking advantage of what happened, and she's getting really heel heat. That's what she did. That's what she ended up getting.
Yeah, she's gonna get that heat, but in terms of where it's gonna lead, only time will tell on that one.
Yeah, but they just gotta keep her. Again, they gotta keep her in that persona, and we'll see what happens. And then, of course, we head to the match between Seth Rollins and Nakamura. And again, all I'm gonna say is on this is that, yeah, great showing by Nakamura. But again, you know, I was surprised there was no run in by Ambrose, although it kind of wouldn't make sense if he, you know, cost his own brand a win here. But then again, really, it really didn't matter. They were going to go with a clean sweep anyways. That was Vince McMahon's idea. But I can say Nakamura, I just shaking my head. Another great match, but still, not guy used his full potential.
Yeah, I would agree. And I wouldn't go any further than that. Just a guy who had so much momentum going into the company after NXT, one of the hottest rising stars. And you even said to yourself, please don't mess this up. And what did they do? They eventually messed it up.
Braun Strowman, Bobby Lashley, and Drew McIntyre were the survivors for the Raw team. You could see it coming a mile. Shane McMahon, amazingly, and, you know, I heard some rumors, and I saw stuff that he is very much diva in the background, in the dressing room, that has to be about him. And when you take a look at these past year Survivor Series, when you take a look at Best in the World, which we still don't, Best in the World, we talk about the Crown Jewel, that Best in the World tournament, you know, he has that trophy there at ringside whenever he's there. I am just amazed why you don't have, how do you not have a Randy Orton on that SmackDown team? You know, you have Jeff Hardy, Rey Mysterio, you know, everyone loses, and it's just Shane McMahon again taking that beat down for SmackDown. I just don't get it. And at the end, you had, of course, Baron Corbin, who knew his time was up once Braun got the win for Team Raw, and he wanted to get the upper hand. And, man, I just don't understand why Shane McMahon always has to be in the match or the sole survivor or, you know, the only one representing SmackDown.
The only way it could ever make sense to me right now, Jeff, for Shane being the position he's in at Crown Jewel, winning the tournament, Best in the World, really just wrestling one match when he didn't start the tournament, and then the scenario here we have at Survivor Series, is that they're building up towards a heel fashion type of Shane McMahon now leaning.
But they didn't show it on SmackDown. I'm like,
they didn't show it on SmackDown, nothing. So maybe it's a slow build, but that's the only way you can logically, in case we're talking about logic in this business, that you can make sense of something like this happening. If not, then, you know, it's just a typical storyline that we see whether we're watching Raw or SmackDown, where something leads somewhere and they go a complete 180 or do a left or right turn, and then, you know what, let's forget about everything else you just saw and let's go in this direction. You know, it's the same thing when we talk about the shirts, the Raw shirts, the red ones and the blue ones for SmackDown Live. It's just, in a way, in my opinion, really insulting our intelligence as fans, because although you're generally your die hardcore, you can still tell where the storyline's going. And with Shane McMahon, like I've said it before in several episodes back then, you know, it's great to see him in the ring. It's great when you saw him come back after a long absence, but you know what? He doesn't need to be in the ring anymore. That's not his job. We would critique Stephanie and Triple H for always opening the show. It doesn't have to be about the authority anymore. It has to be about the show, the personas, the storylines leading up to these several, you know, types of stories we want to look at. Same thing now. Shane's becoming that problem in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, it just, again, they don't explain to it on SmackDown. Here we're thinking that Shane's going to punish the SmackDown brand. There's going to be some changes, but then we only get a comedy act, basically, where The Miz wants to team up with Shane McMahon. He wants to show him how good they can be together, and then, you know, Miz maybe, you know, takes the defeat and loses to two guys there, two that nobody knows who they were. I think we knew who one was, but again, though, like, you know, he takes that loss, so it ended up being a comedy gag, and we got nowhere to any repercussions for SmackDown. But that's fine. I mean, whatever. I mean, that's fine. It's going to be a long thing, maybe. Who knows? But, you know, not a good look for the SmackDown roster as they lose the 5-on-5 men's match, Braun vs. SmackDown. And, again, Braun gets the win. And now Braun will eventually take on Baron Corbin now at TLC. But that is in question, though. That might be in question, that match. We'll talk about that later on, too. Talking about maybe the worst match, AOP and The Bar. Boy, The Bar has been set low. That's all I got to say. I really feel for Sheamus and Cesaro. The Big Show should be this intimidator, this big monster. But again, it's a comedy act, and the funniest part of it was, you know, basically Drake Maverick peeing himself. And, you know, that dry, you know, sophomoric humor that this man loves, they use that, and that's how AOP gets the win, distraction by The Bar there. So I don't know. I don't know what to say. AOP, you had to probably have them get the win. They needed a win to maybe validate their championship wins as the tag team champions. But again, just a matchup that I'm like, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically how I got it too, in terms of, you know, this is something that could have been built up to something great. I mean, when you look at a team like AOP and what they had to live up to from, again, talking about the momentum they had gained and the popularity and the dominance they had at NXT, to come over here and face one of the best tag teams in the tag team division, which isn't many, on the WWE roster. To me, it's just the direction they go when they got rid of Paul Ellering to where they're going now. It seems like they don't know what to do with AOP, and obviously they don't want to call him Authors of Pain anymore. They just want to call him AOP. And with Cesaro and Sheamus, you know, it took them this long to get the you know, the notoriety as a team and what they did on SmackDown, where, you know, they're chasing 1,000, they finally are champions, and this is what they get for it. They're putting this team over, which is, in my opinion, directionless in where they're going. Again, this is kind of the synopsis of what this card's been so far, Jeff, where when we looked down, we watched it, when you compare it to NXT TakeOver, NXT TakeOver, you kind of know what direction they're going in. And so when we watched Survivor Series, it really felt like what direction are they going in? They're going left, right? They're going up, down, upside down. It just really, it seemed like it was kind of done last minute in a sense, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, again, I just think that, you know, AOP needed that big victory. I just think that, you know, I know Sheamus is kind of like dealing with something with his neck, and I think he's got like some kind of stenosis where they're trying to prolong his career by keeping him in the tag team with Cesaro. But you get a guy like Cesaro who could do so much more and would be an amazing singles competitor if given the chance, that someone who could eventually, you know, be something, be an individual champion once again. I just don't know what they're doing. I just feel like it's a wasted opportunity for a guy like Cesaro, and I just honestly think that the whole bar thing is running its course, if you ask me. I understand why they're kind of together. I know that they're really good friends. I know that, hey, they're the SmackDown Live Tag Team Champions. It could be worse, but I just don't think that that was just the right way. If they're going to get a victory, let it be a hard-fought match. I just don't think the comedy needed to be put in there, but you know, that's just my two cents, and you know, we agree that I don't think that was the best match on the card. I think that was the, you know, that was the one that was you know, one that you scratch your head for. The Cruiserweight Championship match was very exciting. The crowd kind of took a while to get into it. Buddy Murphy retains the championship. So, you know, my two cents on it is, yeah, it's great, good matchup, but, you know, they are where they are. They're 205 Live.
Yeah, they're 205 Live, and, you know, just like you said, it took a while for the crowd to get into it, because it still seems to this point, even though Triple H has taken control over supposedly 205 Live, they're not getting the notoriety.
It is what it is.
It is what it is.
205 Live. It's 205 Live. That's the unfortunate part.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a niche. It's like they have that 205 Live tournament, the Cruiserweight Championship tournament, which was great. But look at the guys like a TJ Perkins. Where's he been? You know, this is the guy that you had winning the whole thing. And I have no idea where TJ Perkins has been. He's been kind of like in purgatory. And 205 Live is, again, it's going to be that show, you know, on Wednesdays that you're going to see. But I just, you know, it was great. Buddy Murphy, I'm glad he's a champion. I'm glad he's doing something, because he's a very talented guy. Mustafa Ali is amazing. But it is, at the end of the day, it is what it is. It's 205 Live. And it's kind of tough to have it on this card, because they're really not on brands. So it really was just, you know.
Well, if we're going to be honest here, then it's tough to have it on any card, because unless it's isolated in just 205 Live pay-per-view itself individually, then it's going to get overshadowed by everything else.
Yeah, so much more to talk about. We've got, of course, Brock Lesnar versus Daniel Bryan, and of course, the one everyone is talking about still is Ronda Rousey versus Charlotte. That amazing outcome. But first, Trendsetter, it is the holiday season, and I want to talk about Collar and Elbow. It is an apparel brand founded by Al Snow, mixing wrestling passion with street fashion. Check out the entire winter fashion line, including brand new long sleeve t-shirts and hoodies. You gotta go to collarxelbowbrand.com and save 10% on your entire online purchase just by entering promo code HIGHSPOTPODCAST, all in caps, just in time for the holidays. It's Collar and Elbow. All right, Trendsetter, Brock Lesnar versus Daniel Bryan. I'll get into this one because, of course, everyone's talking about Ronda and Charlotte, so we're going to end it with that. So let's talk about Daniel Bryan and Brock Lesnar. Had a lot of similarities to AJ Styles and Brock from last year. Daniel Bryan beats AJ Styles. There's a lot of talk about contract negotiations for AJ. That's what maybe the reason for the title change, or maybe that Vince wanted to see, you know, just change it up, because we already seen it last year. But Daniel Bryan is a champion, and he gave a tremendous effort here, and I think, man, give him credit for taking all of those suplexes. It was tough to watch. I will say it was very uneasy watching Daniel Bryan take all those. But listen, you knew it was going to happen. You knew at some point he was going to get beaten. The barrage of suplexes that he took was amazing. And he had to come back. And you had that belief in that match for a split second that Daniel Bryan could get that submission victory. And when he had him in the yes lock, and you saw, you know, Brock Lesnar's facial expressions, that acknowledgement at the end, he's like, "You little bastard." You know, he's like, "You." And he had Paul Heyman down there adding to it, saying, "Brock, you almost lost," whatever. It was a really good match, and I think that some fans may not like the outcome, but still, you got a dream match in Brock and Daniel Bryan, and, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where Daniel Bryan takes his character. He feels like the fans have abandoned him, that they moved on, and it's all about his dream of the WWE Championship, and that's where he's going. But I got to give Daniel Bryan credit and Brock Lesnar here because this was, to me, a very good match.
Yeah, if we're going to focus on that, yes, I would agree. It was a good match. Was it a great match? No, by no stretch of the imagination. And if we're going to do like Dave Meltzer, I'm not going to give it stars here because
we don't need to give stars. Very good, great.
And, exactly. Yeah. But it was a good match. It told the story and told the story of the dream match that everybody's wanted to see for the longest time. And then, unfortunately, due to injuries, Dan Bryan couldn't be part of it.
You said
versus Goliath.
There you go.
That's it. But the scenario here felt a little different, though, because although the scenarios and the circumstances in which Daniel Bryan won the WWE Championship over AJ Styles in heelish fashion, it seemed more like people were rooting for Goliath to destroy David. And that's what it felt like in this match as, you know, Daniel Bryan made his comeback. And, you know, I'll give a tremendous amount of credit, Jeff, to Daniel Bryan and his intestinal fortitude to deal with that. After that first suplex, we thought he had injured himself. He's had neck problems before. He's had concussions.
That first one was bad.
The crowd was quiet. You could hear a pin drop in that building. They thought it was really, really bad. He does his comeback. The crowd's not getting excited because now it seems like there's a possibility where it could turn the other way. And, what I take away from this all is the great effort by Daniel Bryan, but more than anything, what I take away from it is, you know, the performer and entertainer. As much as people want to say he's a guy who goes out for the money, he's all about the money. He is a performer.
He's all about the money.
But when it comes to doing business and doing something in the ring, I mean, this guy will bang his own head into a steel post voluntarily to sell it to make it look more legit. So although you're paying him X amount of money, you're going to get your money's worth out of Brock Lesnar, and you got that in this match because he made Daniel Bryan, no offense to Daniel Bryan, but he made Daniel Bryan look really good because he showed that emotion and he put himself in that vulnerable spot that if you're Brock Lesnar, why are you going to do that?
And Brock is stiff as hell. There's no question he's stiff and he's had some errant elbows, whatever. But Brock Lesnar, if he's stiff with you, you can be stiff with him until you get to a point. Those boots, those kicks to the head, he had Daniel Bryan's boot imprint on his face at the end.
Yeah.
So if he's stiff with you, he'll let you be stiff with him. And that, to me, is why Brock Lesnar, he gets it. He gets the performance. He gets that. And that's why, to me, listen, Trendsetter, he's had a career before this. People remember this Brock Lesnar, all because he's taken on the Bronze and the Roman Reigns, and he ended the Undertaker streak.
And he does 25 suplexes.
But that's how he's booked. When they say same old shit, it's because that's what Vince McMahon wants.
Exactly. And people tend to forget that he had a career. He had a very successful career early on.
Kurt Angle, WrestleMania 19.
The Rock at Survivor Series. SummerSlam.
Undertaker in the Hell in a Cell match. Eddie Guerrero. The man can go.
He knows how to tell stories in the ring. And that's what people tend to forget. And you saw that in this match. And this is why you said early on during the show that, you know, as much as people, you know, want to poo-poo on the fact that Brock Lesnar is the Universal Champion, the title's not going to be defended, wah-wah-wah. Again, you get your money's worth when you see Brock Lesnar because he can carry it to the point where he is worth the price of admission. He's a once-in-a-lifetime athlete, and he has that experience that people tend to forget. He has the psychology.
And
he knows
legit.
The mental way of telling a story in the ring. And you see, like you said, he's a legit fighter.
So, you know, kudos to Brock Lesnar. That's my rant on Brock Lesnar, and you can roll your eyes, you can say whatever, but because you do that, you're getting sucked in. You're the mark because that's how they want him to be booked. So when you're yelling same old shit, when you're saying, oh, Brock, he takes the title, he doesn't show up on Raw, you know what? Big freaking deal. That's how he's booked. He's a once-in-a-lifetime generational athlete, and he should be treated as a special attraction. You know, when he's gone, you're going to be asking, where's Brock? Oh, remember when Brock did this? Remember? He's a legit WWE UFC guy, and you know what? Whether he wins or loses against Daniel Cormier, whenever the hell they decide to have that UFC fight, he's going to be, if he wins, could you imagine? He will be the greatest WWE champion of all time.
Yeah, he would have been. And that's the way they're trying to build it up towards. But you're right. He's, you know, and I hate to make this comparison. I'm sure people will be like, you cannot do this. But he's the modern day version, in my opinion, of what Andre the Giant was. When you see him, because he's not around all the time, you want to go see him because you don't know if it's the last time you're going to see him. It's like Paul Heyman used to say, if you had Christmas every single day, which we're building up towards Christmas or WrestleMania, it'd get boring. That's why WrestleMania is once a year. That's why Christmas is once a year. That's why these special attractions happen only very few and far between, because when they happen, they mean something. And that's what Brock Lesnar is doing right now.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you're so correct on the whole Christmas theory too. And now, Trendsetter, my question to you, before we get to Ronda Rousey and Charlotte, I want to ask you this, because this is my feeling on this. I think as a writer now in WWE, I need to be very careful the way I write things, because the way I make things out to be, I can easily make a heel into a babyface right away, because it seems like now, the way society is, the way that we are, this is definitely in the Attitude Era with Stone Cold Steve Austin, we could relate to the boss versus the employee relationship, where you've always wanted to, one point or another, you wanted to take your boss and kick his ass. The same thing where, like, you've been betrayed as a friend, you've always been in the limelight, you've been in the shadow, and now all of a sudden, like, that person finally gets a chance to give you the comeuppance and take that, you know, that light away from you, take whatever you had away from you. And that's why Becky Lynch was relatable. That's why everyone went to Becky Lynch. Can you, as a writer, maybe book something where you're like, you know what, I accidentally just supposed to go this way, but it went the other way because the fans now are just very hard with these areas of gray?
Well, I think the heart of the areas are gray if we're talking about the fans, Jeff, because it's something you and I have talked about, and, you know, it, to me, it's the John Cena effect. It's the Roman Reigns effect. You can go all the way back to Hulk Hogan when you're, you know, training, saying your prayers, eating your vitamins. When you do something for a while, it becomes kind of stale, and when you start kind of not changing direction or listening to the direction of the crowd or evolving and redefining your characters, you get resentment very quickly. And the point I'm making towards, for example, you know, a Ronda Rousey, you know,
is it really quickly the resentment going for Ronda now?
Yeah, in my opinion, I think so too. I mean, when the signing happened, it was huge. But then when she's put in this position where she's now the Raw Women's Champion, she's put in those positions where she's main event and defeating people that have been well more established than she has, it starts picking up resentment from the whatever the die hardcores or even the general audience, because, you know, although she is here for an extended period of time and they're trying to compare like a Brock Lesnar type of person, it doesn't fit her build. You know, as much as people want to build it up, I'm not sold on it. The baddest bitch on the planet or baddest woman, whatever you want to call it, it doesn't sold on me.
She calls herself a bitch, so you can.
No, which either one, whether they call it the baddest woman or the baddest bitch, I don't know. But ultimately, to me, it's the fact that now I feel, as much as they're chanting Ronda Rousey and she's tearing up at the reception, I think people internally enjoy her getting beat up, because when you have that dominant force for so long, or that dominant force is being booked that way, it starts developing resentment from the audience.
And now here's the thing. Is it the normal WWE fan or is it the smart wrestling fan?
I think it's a little bit of both, because I think, you know, even let's turn this back to sports, right? When you see a team that's dominant, now, if it's your team, it's great. You love it, right? But as soon as you start loving the sport, you start getting angry with that type of team that's constantly winning. Everything looks easy to them. Everything supposedly handed to them. Now, I'm not saying things are handed to Ronda. It comes to that appearance, but she's worked really hard on it. She had a great match with Charlotte, I think, did really good. But ultimately, regardless of all that, people don't feel she deserves to be in that position. So when they see somebody like Charlotte, like Becky, stick it to her, even the Bellas to that extent, they root for that, because you know what? As much as you're a dominant force, and this is what happened to Roman Reigns, Jeff, he became so dominant, the fact that he wasn't relatable anymore. You know, with Hulk Hogan, you had that sense of vulnerability. You had that sense that, you know, you rooted for him, and, you know, every single task seemed to be insurmountable for him. But eventually it got stale because you knew where it was going. Hogan was always going to win. Roman's always going to win. Cena was always going to win. And kick out strong on two. And now Ronda seems to fall into that same pattern where now
so
I feel that's where
too.
Resentment.
Not even a year. Not
yeah, well,
year.
That's the resentment, because there is no relatability. They're building her up as a Brock Lesnar. But at the same time, if for Ronda Rousey, you need to relate to the audience. You need to connect with them. And when you start feeling the fact that, oh, the machine is now putting her in this position, the resentment starts. And now they want to see her get her up and comings, which she did at Survivor Series.
See, but I thought here where I think where the whole Charlotte Flair thing, she was getting kind of stale a little bit.
Yeah.
Right? But I don't think that we were being force-fed Charlotte. I think it was just all natural with her success because she was that damn good.
I think the character was force-fed, because a lot of things she said and how she came out. Because here's the thing that always annoys me is when you see the history of how things are built up and then they ignore the history in the past of how it was. Because, you know, Charlotte's been a heel. She's more better as a heel, in my opinion, than a babyface.
And so much better as a heel.
But then when she changes her demeanor so much and does a complete 180, I think the audience, or at least in my opinion, you lose a lot of connection with the person there. So when it becomes the same kind of cookie-cutter type of personality, which we know that's not really Charlotte character-wise. She's been the bad person before. She doesn't have that methodical edge to her anymore. It becomes stale, so you start rooting for the other one. That's why Becky had so many more cheers, because she took her real-life situations, brought them into the storyline, and made it more realistic, as if it was a shoot, as if she was really speaking from the heart. It wasn't scripted, aka, as they say all the time.
The crowd wanted Becky from the beginning, but towards the end, it was all about Charlotte. They did a tremendous job. I think the matchup was really good. I think it was more realistic, kind of, because the issue with Ronda is she's going after that arm. If you make a mistake, it's kind of like the RKO. If you fall asleep, she's going to take that arm and she's going to put you in that submission, right? And I think the struggle of Charlotte trying to get out of it and then her trying to put her in the figure eight, I think it was really good. But the end, Charlotte just went off. She went crazy and she gave Ronda a beatdown. I'm going to commend Ronda because she's really got to love this thing.
Yeah.
She's really got to love this business for her to take that beating that she took with the kendo stick, broke the kendo stick, hurt her ear. I mean, you saw the scars.
There are no
like
amount of zeros in that paycheck that will make you want to take that personally.
And let me tell you, it's a very special person that you have to be a professional wrestler. I will say this again, for you to take that knowingly, just like Daniel Bryan, when he goes into that matchup, he knows he's going to get his ass kicked. He knows for at least a good 15, 20 minutes, he's going to get the hell beat out of him, right? And you know that because you're a wrestler. That's the story you have to tell.
It.
Ronda Rousey, you know, when you're telling her there, she's got to have this passion for this business. So I commend her highly on it. I commend her that her wrestling is getting better. But you're right. I do get that fact where, like, hey, listen, that whole thing where you're giving the little T-shirt or the glasses to the fan, and when you're, like, almost tearing up when you're walking in, that, to me, can sometimes be a little bit of a, you know what? It's starting to get stale.
And let's go back real quick to the fact that they've been building her to be very strong and dominant as she is, as this type of, you know, immovable force, and, you know, like a Brock Lesnar type of athlete. Let me ask you a question. After the beatdown, after she got beaten and looked for the first time in her debut since she started here in the WWE, looked very vulnerable because she really got herself beat up. She got her ass handed to her, if I have to say that. Did you feel a sense of, you know, sympathy for her? Because I honestly didn't. I didn't feel sympathy for her.
The Staples crowd didn't show any sympathy whatsoever. They were thanking Charlotte.
So did WWE live up to what they were going to do? Because you could definitely tell they're building this to have people relate more to Ronda, feel more sympathetic to her, kind of place her in terms of an underdog type of thing, which she hasn't been booked that since.
It's funny, man.
And it didn't work.
It's funny to me because they're pushing Becky. They're pushing Charlotte. This was her push. This was to get Charlotte over. And Ronda on Monday night comes out, and they have to make her look strong. They even made her look strong because that chair shot that he took on her neck, she walked away from it. She walked out on her own power because they have to make her look strong. Then the next Monday night on Raw, she looks strong.
Does it do more harm for her? Because people have been talking to me about how that's more of like a Stone Cold Steve Austin moment at WrestleMania 13 when he got, you know, he passed out to the pain, was bleeding on his face, and then walked out limping.
No, Becky, it's a big difference. Becky had that Stone Cold moment on Raw.
Did Ronda have that type of moment too? Did you look at Ronda as like, wow, she's really tough because she's able to walk away from that?
I thought that was Charlotte's moment. Mm-hmm. At no point, all I give credit for Ronda is that her wrestling's getting better and she took a whooping like no one has taken a whooping in a long time,
yeah.
Especially for Ronda Rousey, somebody who's on the plateau that she's at as a female performer in UFC, for her to take kendo sticks and chair shots, it's very impressive. But I think, again, at the end of the day, I'm going to remember more, it was Charlotte's getting over, Charlotte's going crazy, and, you know, and then Becky. To me, the Stone Cold Steve Austin moment is Becky's from Monday night when she got busted nose. So it was a good match, and they did what they wanted to do. They got Charlotte over, and now when we head into WrestleMania, we're still four months away, but now you have a lot of ways you can go with it. You can go with Becky versus Ronda. But again, this whole Charlotte thing, I don't think they've built her up this much for her to be in the sidelines in a secondary matchup. I think they've got plans for making this a triple threat match. And not only that, a triple threat match, but the main event of WrestleMania 35 in New York City, which tickets went on sale and it's almost sold out. And it's crazy that the main event in New York City that's going to sell out will be this match.
In Jersey.
Yeah, it's going to be. It could possibly be a women's matchup. So what a huge year it's been for the whole women's evolution.
It could possibly be that, but a lot of things can change from this point on, leading to TLC, into the Royal Rumble, into WrestleMania. A lot of things, you know, Jeff, change in the split second. Something you had mentioned to me watching the pay-per-view, and I want to ask you this question now as we're here on the show, because we talked about while we were watching the pay-per-view. With all this being done, right, with the whole talking about Charlotte and what she did and how vicious she was against Ronda, does this steal Becky Lynch's heat?
Yeah.
Can Becky Lynch recuperate from this and find herself in a triple threat match?
Yeah, you didn't see her this Thursday. Why do I keep saying Thursday? You didn't see her this past Tuesday on SmackDown. I think they want to keep her away a little bit so then when she comes back, you know, there's a huge pop for her. But you're right. It could have stolen Becky Lynch is Thunder because – let's be honest, the society that we are is what have you done for me lately? And yes, at the beginning, they were yelling for Becky when Charlotte was getting beat up by Peyton Royce and Billie Kay. They were yelling for Becky. Just how much longer do you want to keep her away where they might not yell for Becky and it's about Charlotte? Because Charlotte, after that, dominated those two females. And she shows that Charlotte is dominant and she's now going that extra mile. She's more aggressive. So
does it kill any of Becky's momentum, you think, when she comes back?
It depends, man. It totally depends on how they bring her back. Are they going to strip her of the title because she's missed? Is she going to miss more weeks? Are they going to make it where, listen, she's got to defend the title? If not, then they got to strip her of it. I think if they strip her of it, it's going to be unfair for them to do so because of injury. And maybe the fans get behind her. But again, though, you gotta be careful here because you've put all the eggs in the basket of Charlotte now because she's the image that we get is not Becky beating Ronda, but we see Charlotte beating Ronda. So that's what people's
and the manner in which she beat up
and
Ronda.
And the manner that she beat her up, yep. And I think you're doing a disservice to Ronda by talking all the smack on Instagram. It's funny, it's good, but it's just instigating. And I think that when you're a face and you want to be portrayed the face, you can't have her instigate that much on Instagram. There's a point where the social media, and this is also too... also awesome. Becky Lynch is having a field day on social media.
Oh, yeah.
She is getting over on social media. That's the new age that we're living in where, you know, through social media, through Twitter, through Instagram, through Facebook, that you can build up a feud. And it's going to be interesting, man. It's going to be interesting to have this discussion as we head into WrestleMania, as we head into TLC, as we head into, you know, the upcoming months, as you said, the lead up to WrestleMania. It's going to be awesome because there's a lot of stuff to talk to, and it's about the women's division in the WWE. And again, I will say this before we wrap it up here. I would say the first hour of the pre-show, they were doing the whole video package for the whole story between Ronda and Charlotte and Becky, right? And they were analyzing for a good 20 minutes. And I'm going to tell you, I got into it. I was like, wow, I'm actually into and I'm analyzing this women's matchup. And kudos to everybody there because that women's division, that is a huge storyline for 2018 and the whole women's evolution because... again, there is a possibility that at WrestleMania 35, for the first time ever, it was a lot of firsts for the females this year, but for them to be the main event at a WrestleMania, it is absolutely amazing.
Well, it looks like it might happen. It looks like it's going to happen. That's the way it's going right now. But like we said before, a lot can change from here to there. But last thing I want to ask you, Jeff, in terms of the whole Charlotte, Becky Lynch, and Ronda Rousey thing, if that is a triple threat match, would it be unfair if one of them sees themselves out of it? Or does it have to be a triple threat match? Are you more prone to watching Ronda and Charlotte, or do you want to see Becky and Ronda?
Well, I was down to see Becky and Ronda, but now with the whole thing with Charlotte has just, you know, with that beat down, you know, they've all three become very interesting to watch. So I would love to see them three go at it. I think that's their intention. I don't think they want to forget about Charlotte. That's why they had Charlotte do what she did this past Sunday on Survivor Series. But again, it's just all tremendous. It's all leading into an amazing road to WrestleMania here on the High Spot Podcast. We look forward to being a part of that as well as we have that build to WrestleMania. So much more stuff going on in the world of professional wrestling, but Survivor Series and TakeOver were the talk of this whole week. We're going to monitor the whole injury to Braun Strowman, whether that elbow injury will actually make him miss TLC, so we'll follow that up. News on Alexa Bliss, we'll keep monitoring whether, you know, this injury is a little bit worse than it is and whether she could possibly have a career-ending injury where she just becomes a figure on Raw, like an authority figure, and, you know, it would be really sad if, you know, Alexa Bliss's career is over.
It would be sad, but again, at the same time, when you look at somebody like Alexa Bliss, her stature, her size, it would be surprising that, you know, her body can't withstand that type of punishment from a day, from, you know, a daily basis and the grueling schedule they have. But at the same time, I don't think her future is completely done because she's just so good in terms of personality wise. Their career can continue, but just not in ring form anymore.
All right, Trendsetter, where can they listen to the High Spot Podcast?
Well, you guys can listen to the High Spot Podcast basically on the Cheap Pops Network. We are on Spreaker now. You guys can listen to us on iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, all the social media platforms out there. You can also follow us on our social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and also follow us on our website, highspotpodcast.com.
And of course, our High Spot Podcast YouTube channel is up and running. Make sure to like and subscribe. Man, over 1,000 and likes, 1,000 subscribers, yep, to the YouTube channel. Let's keep that up, guys. And you can catch video from High Spot Podcast miniseries Adventures with the Trendsetter, Your Exotica, this past November. A lot of videos up there, a lot of content for you guys to digest. So continued success with that, Trendsetter. And on to bigger and better things. And of course, you can also listen to us on the Cheap Pops Podcast Network, Shining Wizards, and B Plus Player Radio Networks. And again, our debut episode on Spreaker.com and also bodyslams.net. Thank you so much for giving us a platform there, for putting on the show and articles down the road there. We will recap Final Battle, which looking forward to in a couple weeks for that. But man, Trendsetter, so much news. There's never a time for us to rest here on the High Spot Podcast. And what can I say, man? That turkey, I am stuffed. And looking forward to the holiday season, Trendsetter, here. The holiday season on the High Spot Podcast.
Well, maybe you're looking forward to the holiday season, Jeff. I am to an extent, but I'm already getting sick and tired of that Christmas music myself. I'm sorry to be
never
a heel
tired
here,
of Christmas
but
music,
you'll hear the same song and rendition so many times, it starts getting to you guys.
The most wonderful time of the year.
Well, for you it is. For me, it's just another day. But guys, we hope you enjoyed this episode of the High Spot Podcast. I'm my tag team partner, Jeff Martin. I am the Trendsetter, Brian Berger. Thank you guys so much for listening to us, the Jersey Wrecking Crew here. We'll catch you next week. And remember, guys, we do this for one reason, and one reason only has always been the answer every single time, every single week. We do it for you, the crew.
Black Friday, collar and elbow, High Spot Podcast. Type it in, 10%.